Session number 16712, Albert Scatchard, Reel 1.
Mr. Scatcherd, Reel 1. What's your date of birth, Mr. Scatcherd?
June the 22nd, 1916.
Where were you born?
And I was born in Clearpath, in Durham City.
You have brothers and sisters?
I have brother and two sisters. They're all dead now, like.
So were you where did you come in the number? Were you youngest or...?
I was the youngest in the family. Mm-hmm.
What did your father do for a living?
Father? He was just a labourer. And as far as I knew from later on, he was killed during the war.
That's the First World War?
First World War, yeah. Uh-huh.
So your mother brought you up basically on her own?
Basically on her own, aye. Well, we were very poor, and... I finished up at about the age of about six to seven in the local home for the poor children, because my mother couldn't afford to keep me at home at that time, because she was living with her mother, and I was in there for about three years in the home, and then they came and got me out, and I just carried on with it, with the ordinary home life after that.
What kind of area was it like, Claypath?
The area was very, very poor area. In fact, it was we lived at Crossgate then, and were happy enough childhood, because mixed in with all the local kids, doing what local kids did, breaking into somebody's garden and pinching apples and such what. And had quite a good time. And anyway, later on, as I got older, and I got to 16, I was offered a job at the pits.
Just before we get to that, the community that you lived in, was it closely knit? Did they help each other?
Oh yes, the community, they really were helpful to each other. I mean, let's face it, we knew everybody from the top of the street right away down to the bottom. If anybody was ill, there was always somebody there to help them out. And Durham City itself then, was beautiful compared to today's concrete. Chaos, that's what I call it. And we used to watch the lamp man come on, lighting the lanterns at night time. And we all knew the coal man, a fellow called Paddy Burke. And we often used to see the police helping the car to go up to corner Silver Street, because it was all cobble streets them days. And see the police pushing the cart and helping them up Silver Street, and then there was the old traction engine used to come away from the gas yard, and it used to come over from Framgate Bridge and up Silver Street, and 9 times out of 10 before it got into the marketplace it broke down, and well, some great fun, like, you know, helping pushing them up and that, you know, dodging about.
Did your mother work?
No, my mother didn't work. No, she couldn't work. No, she couldn't work. Ill.
As children, at a later age, of course, but as children, did you do little jobs for money to, you know, help out?
Oh, yes, we did little jobs like that. Oh, yes, we really had to go. I mean, if we wanted money for the pictures, would go and do messages for somebody. And we should get a halfpenny. Well, we should try and get two jobs in the week because a penny got us into the local pictures. And we should go to the Globe Cinema on North Road in Durham. And that was our favourite one. We should go in there. And we should have some great fun in there. Because I remember once there was a war picture on. In fact, I know the name of it now. The Battle of the Falkland Islands in the First World War. And there was a lot on the drums in there. And because our little orchestra pit, you know, giving the sound effects, you see, for the guns fighting, that you used to beat the drum when the gun went off. And somebody had distracted him, and there he was beating the drum, and the guns had been fighting half an hour before. The room was quiet. And Clemmy Stevenson, that's what they call him, aye. And we should come out of there and wave to the local fish shop. Gleason's at the top of Crossgate. We used to get in there and get, well, it was always chips we got, like, and pent the scrapings, where you got as many pieces of fish among the scrapings as what the people were buying fish for. You used to pay tuppence for a fish. And after that, like, mate, it was way down home and away to bed. And then school the following morning, I went to Blue Coat School in Clayford. And
what was it like, the school?
In the school then, it was were very, very strict. Very strict. Yes, they were. And what a headmaster called, in fact, we called him Bussy Howard. And his wife was also there. And she always had a dog in the classroom with her, a little dog called Beauty. And he used to lie in the corner all morning. I never seen a dog get anything to eat yet. She used to give it a couple of biscuits during the lessons, and that's about all. And our teacher was a fellow called Percy Bramwell, by his brother had the paper shop on North Road. And Wolf Bramwell, that's what they called him. And I used to run messages for him, and I used to do his garden and all at night time. And he had an allotment round by St. Margaret's School, where St. Margaret's School was. And I used to take his accumulator, because in them days the radios were all run by, they had an accumulator over there, so take them down, get them charged, and bring his other two up. So he had the radio all the week, you see. And it used to cost about, I believe it was about threepence a time to do that. And then we used to come away from there. And then the summer holidays, it was great in the summer holidays, because summer was really summer then. It was sunshine all the way through. And we should get away around to along by the New Inn there, to a little wood there, and they call it Bluebell Wood. And used to get in there and get up to all the usual pranks, climbing trees and that, and gathering stacks and stacks of bluebells, coming around selling to the neighbours for a half pence, and getting enough to get to the pictures at night time. And then going out blackberrying and selling cans of blackberries. Well, I tell you what, if we go to a bad morning, we should put all the reddens in and get some nice big black ones and put them all on top and sell them. It should be a penny a can. And you can hear the shouts of them, like, you know, when we come away, like, you know, hey, we'll come back here, look at these. You say, oh, they're all right, man, and away we're off. And if we didn't like them in them days, we used to have these old-fashioned doorbells on what you pull down, you know. We should get some thick elastic, fasten a brick on and just hang it over there where we've got nothing down all the time, like, you know, ringing the bell and we were off our marks, like. Or get a old milk bottle and just drop it on the pavement outside the door and say, Mrs. Your window's broke, and off we went, like. It was all good fun. But anyway,
Well, it would be pretty tough times, though, weren't they?
Oh, yes. Oh, they were, definitely. Oh, there was no, what do you call, rich people. No.
How did you do for clothing and replacing clothing?
Well, clothing, it was nearly all cast-offs, definitely, yes. I remember the first new suit I ever got, my brother bought it, because he was working for a fellow working on the milk round for a fellow called Longstaff. And he said, I'm going to get you a suit. And I'll tell you where I got it made, at Langley Moor. And then, what to call the fella again? Gatsby, I think it's something like that. Anyway, the shop was at Langley Moor at the bottom, but anyway, he was a tailor. And that was the first suit I ever got, was there. And,
was there?
Previously, my grandfather, he was a tailor at the Cash tailor shop at the bottom of Silver Street. He was the tailor there, and he used to make me trousers and coats and things like that. He used to do that for me.
Was there any help from the government or what have you to poor families in those
days? No, there was nothing at all. We've got absolutely nothing. Just had to rely on your own resources.
What was the food like you were getting and your mother was able to give you?
Oh, the food orders, well, it was mainly jam and bread, but sundaes. And well, my grandmother, she used to make soup on a Saturday. And all the neighbours used to come up and get cans of soup. And there used to be a penny a can. And she fed the whole street. And that was every week. I remember that, aye. And
what was the house like that you lived in?
Oh, it was very poor. In fact, the house I lived in, I'll tell you where it is. It was, I don't know whether you know or not, but it was where the plumbers were, at the top of Crosscut. Denison's, the plumbers. It was that was the house there. Now, originally that, it was a forge. It was a blacksmith's. It was a forge underneath, and we went through a passage at the side, and our house, our living quarters, was above that. And at the back, it used to look right, directly, straight over onto Durham Cathedral. And there's a churchyard at the back there and all. St. Margaret's, the old churchyard. And we used to have some fun in there and all, like, you know, dressing up, you know, putting the sheets over each other and frightening everybody to death. And
how many bedrooms did you have?
There was only the two bedrooms, and the kitchen comes sitting room sort of style. And it was coal fire, and we had the old rocky chairs, and what a great big log. Big like a tree trunk like that, went through use. It was really highly polished, and we always to try and make a grab for that. And anyway, we've gone on a bit, and there's one day the grandfather come in, and he caught me with a tab end where I picked up, and I said, "I can smoke this." So he says, "Well, go on then," and he went and got a match. There were no lighters them days. Got a match in. He lit it and he says, "Get it smoked." Anyway, I threw it away. I didn't want it. So he lit his old clay pipe up. And he used to smoke in them days Lady's Twist, what they call Lady's Twist. And he filled his pipe up. And it was all important. And he says, "Get this." And he shoved it in my mouth. And he says, "Go on, puff it in." I puffed it in, boy. I must have turned green. I was as sick as a bloody dog. And anyway, that backed me in smoking. In fact, I never smoked no more after that. For a long, well after I started work.
Do you remember how much money your mother was having to live on?
Very little. See, I believe, of the Border Guardians, that was it, yes, it was, the Border Guardians, I remember now. She was getting about a half a crown or something like that. That's what it was, for the two of us. That's what we got.
And you say that at six you had to go into home because she just couldn't afford to keep you any longer.
She just couldn't keep us at home any longer because my mother moved in with my grandmother. Well, the other brothers and sisters were all living there, you see. And there's two of us into the home, my brother and myself. And they kept the daughters at home.
Did you understand why you were being moved at that young age?
Well, we didn't understand it, but at that time. But that was due to poverty, you know, was it?
But it must have been quite a unhappy time for you to be moved.
Oh, it was like, but once we got into the home, and we got in with other poor kids, I mean, we're all of the same sort of breed then. We all knew each other, really. And, well, we got on pretty well.
Was this a church-led home? Or?
No, it was a council-run thing, yes.
And what was life like in the home?
Well, it was very, very strict. In fact, there was a master and matron there. They were Welsh, and they were from... Welsh, and they were from Wales. Mr. and Mrs. Mayfield, that was the name. And they had a nanny, and they called her Daisy. I forget what her second name was. And she was very good to us because she used to bring different foods down, you know, the sandwiches and that, you know, when nobody else was looking, sort of stuff. And, well, I was not all that bad, like, you know, really. And the Christmas and that, you always got a toy of some sort at Christmas, like, you know, and that's about all, like. But I didn't remember much more about it, like, myself, like.
And you say after some 3 years you came out and went back to the family?
Went back to the family after about 3 years. We still living at Crosscut then.
Did the church figure in your family life at all? Were you church-going people?
Or
chapel?
My mother was. She believed in the Salvation Army a lot. She used to go to Salvation Army meetings a lot. Uh-huh. She belonged really to the Salvation Army. But we didn't bother the church much. But we used to go to St. John's when we were in that home. It was every Sunday night as well. We used to go there.
What was the discipline of the home? Was it corporal punishment if you did anything wrong? You get hit with something as cane or...
Yes. Oh, you got the strap. Oh, you definitely got the strap. Definitely. Uh-huh. Yes, if you did anything really wrong, you got six of the best.
Was your mother able to visit you while you were in the home?
Oh, yes, all the time, any time, yes. Oh, yes, she was available any time she wanted.
You went, you said, to Blue Coat School.
Yeah.
How long were you there?
From the age of starting school to I finished at 14.
That was a through school. You went right through the whole school.
I went through the whole school at that time, at one school. There was no change in that.
As you got into the more senior end, what was school life like then?
Oh, school life was pretty good.
You quite enjoyed it?
Oh, yes, I did. I like school. Uh-huh.
Did you join the Boy Scouts or the Church Lads Brigade, anything like that?
Well, we were in the Tuck H. It used to be down the back of Sadler Street there. Silver Street, rather. We were in the Tuck H, and there was a fella there. He was a Paul. Paulish, he was. Tedeschi, that's it. T-E-D, that's it. Tedeschi. A fella called Tedeschi. And I remember all his names. He was a nice fella, him. And I remember they were going on a camping weekend, and they were short of a handcart. Well, I knew somebody who had a handcart at that time, a builder. So I went up and asked him. I said, look, I said, the Tuck H, I said, they want to lend him a handcart, I said, for the weekend to put the gear on and to pull it down. Down to Hoffel, that's where I went to, Hoffel. And he said, well, he said, when will I get it back? I said, well, I said, 2 days at least. He says, all right. He said, you're responsible for it, mate. So anyway, we got it, and it was brand new, and just been painted. In fact, it had been made by Metcalf, the wheelwright, at the top of Charlesgate. And it was a fellow called Alderson, the builder, who lent us it. And anyway, we went, I got it, and there's two or three of us, like, we took it down to the headquarters, and he asked me, like, he said, would you like to come for the holiday, like, you know, for the weekend? And, well, I wasn't bothered myself, like, but anyway, they persuaded me, and I went there with them, like, I went down to onto Lady Headland's estate, down just opposite Maiden Castle Wood. And we're down there for about 3 or 4 days. I really enjoyed it.
What kind of activities did you do in Tuck H? You mentioned the camping. What else did you do?
Well, did you start the... almost similar to the Scouts, really. Learning sailing. Not making, you know, and all that, you know, and general country practices, you know, going out at night time, you know, and looking for foxes, badgers, and things like that. It was good, quite fun, like, you know, it was good.
You say you left school at 14. What was it like getting work in those days? Was it easy?
Well, there was always plenty of work for young lads, because the colliers were always taking somebody on. And the first job I got, I went to Cummins with the Colliery. And we used to walk it then. There was no transport.
How far would that be?
And about 3 miles from Durham, 3.5 miles. It didn't matter what the weather was, we ought to be there. And the first job we had was working on what they call the belts. And that was, the job was to get in all the stones, the belts used to come down in front of you, a big conveyor belt, big metal thing, and used to come clattering down with all the coal spread out, and you had to get all the stones out of it, throw them into a box, and then put them into a big bogey, and then two lads used to come and take them away over the tip and tip them out. And that was our job for 8 hours.
What time did you start?
And... Well, we had, there was two different shifts on. One shift used to start at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning till 2, and then the other shift used to be on 2 o'clock till 8 o'clock at night. And
and how much was your pay?
Well, the pay was, I couldn't tell you exactly, it wasn't very much. I think it was a tanner a day or something like that. Something like that. It wasn't very much anyway. I think it was about 4 and 6 a week, something like that, for the 5 shifts. And then, anyway, after being about a year there on that, they used to train you while you were at bank, train you for riding the ponies, you know, riding the limits, what they call riding the limits. And that was... I'm the pony, and you used to have a tub behind there, and there was just like a little bar you used to sit on. You used to drive the pony along and just pull the tub round, and we eventually knew what it was all about, like when we got underground. And we used to train on doing that. About 3 months after that, we went down the pit. Well, I went down the old pit. Because there was 2 shops at Kimmsworth. It was the Busty and the Old Pit. Well, the Old Pit, the cage, it was gravity driven. That was like a big water canister, like, you know, hanging down. As soon as I got full, it went down and it pulled the cage up the other side, you see. And when it got empty and they filled the cage up, you see, let the water out and then the cage used to come down again. That's what we used to ride in. Well, I've seen us work 8 hours in a dry seam, completely dry, full of dust and everything, and come out at night time or at the end of the shift and get absolutely soaking wet with the overflow from the top of the water coming down. Oh, all that. And
did you get an increase in your wage when you went down the pit?
Oh, you did. We got a little bit more for being underground. Oh, yes, we got that. And
what was life like underground in those days?
Oh, it was real rough. Oh, nothing like, I mean, nothing like to what it is today in the collieries. Oh, not a thing. No. It is, you walked in, you used to walk in maybe about a mile, and you had the old Davy lamp, safety lamp. And what you used to do, we used to be known as London lads. Now the tubs used to come in and into the big landing, and if I was working on the big landing, what we used to do, we used to separate the tubs. There'd be about 40 tubs on us, what they call it, on a set. We should disengage them and send the full set of coal out, full set of tubs with the coal on, and we'd have all these empty ones. Now we should send these empty ones at about 6 at a time into what was known as the small landing. That was further in. Well, the putters used to come, and they used to collect them, hand putters, and used to take them in to where the men were hewing. Well, it's the same about, it was a good seam, it was about 2'9" to 3' in height. Well, it was good workable conditions then, because some of the seams later on, well, they came down to about 9 or 10 inches. In fact, the mice were about bow-legged. And we should go in there. And as I said, the putters used to come and get the empty tube, take it in, and the man who was you in the coal, he used to have the tube filled, and he used to put his token on the tube inside, and the putter used to put his token on to show, you know, who'd pulled it out and who'd filled it, so, you know, for the pay, for the check worm into the weekend, you know, to check out how many they got out and everything, and then the pay was just set by that. And we, I did that for about 6 months in the big landing, and then I went in by myself then after that. And I went in on there, riding the limbus, going in like getting the tubs out myself, like where it was too heavy for the men to pull out. Well, the pony was to pull it out. And if you made a mistake and hung your coat on the prop and your bait was in your pocket at the side, and the pony went in, there's no way you had got any bait that day. The pony should stop. You could hear him pull all the bait out of your pocket. He'd stand there and eat it. You could do anything you want with that pony. Wouldn't move. No way. And Just like if there was going to be a fall or something in front, some obstacle in front, that pony wouldn't move. They knew it was going to be a fall in front. How the hell they knew, I don't know, but it was right.
I've heard this before.
Yes, it was quite true. You'd always see it where there was a pony.
So you get quite attached to them.
Oh, you did, aren't you? I had one there called Mouse. Man, he's anything but a mouse. You're lying. Yeah, me. I used to get some of them. Well, we had the money. Like, we used to get a bit. Take some chopping in, what they call chopping in, was chaff, you know, from the oats and that out the stables. Because you always have to look after your own pony. You have to take it in there, and you have to saddle it up and everything. And, the horsekeeper himself, mine, he was the one that really looked after ponies, fed them and all that. We used to get a handful of oats, like take them in by with us, you know. Just give them And that's how they got really attached to you. Anyway, I worked there till I went with a lad called Barton one Friday afternoon. And it was a beautiful day. I'm walking to work as usual. And we got halfway between Pity Me and Kimmelsworth. Well, the road's completely different there now. It's just all green fields. And we got through there. And he says, "Do you know, Albert?" He says, "We mugs," he says. "Look at them lads working in that field over there. There was some farm lads working, like, you know." He says, "We working down in that lot down there." And he says, "Yeah, I've got a pocket in." So I says, "Well," I says, "I'm pretty sick of it and all, like." But anyway, we turned back. We didn't go to work. We turned back.